Hi, everybody. It's Diane. It is Tuesday, December 2nd, and I'm with the 2 o'clock group. Got April and Christy and Sheila and Donna so far. Let's start with a quick check-in and see how things have been going with systems and structures or just generally. Who wants to start us off?
Hi, this is Donna. I actually missed the last session, and I haven't caught up, so I still have to at least listen to the previous recording. But so far from at least a school perspective where we've had the most problem in the last 2 years, I guess in general I feel very fortunate that this year we have a good teacher that's really supportive and understanding of, you know, behavior issues. So, and with me volunteering so much more of my time at the school, so the school situation is much more, better managed. So we don't have much problems at school. It's just that occasionally at home, especially on the weekends where, you know, it's a little bit more lax, that's where we have a bit of a struggle, but it's still not as bad. So I guess in general, you know, it's not perfect, but it's manageable.
Great. What's different, Donna? You said that what was making it different at school, but what's making it different at home?
Maybe I'm not really implementing, strict regimen even on the weekend, especially. I tend to kind of loosen up on him more. I let him play video game time on the weekends, and sometimes with me doing other chores at the same time. While I let him play. It kind of exceeds the 2 hours that we have been discussing its limit on a weekend. So especially this Thanksgiving, we've had many days off. So he spent at least like 4 or 5 hours in a day. I mean, it allowed me to do other things, but sometimes when I have to ask him to stop, he gets upset. But then, you know, he recovers, 15, 30 minutes later and understands. So,
well, it's hard because it's the weekend, and so the last thing you want is to be able to have the weekend as well, and so it makes it difficult to put in the systems and structures. So that makes sense. So be gentle with yourself, find some easy things to do, and try to find a way to enjoy your weekend as well.
Yeah, and it's also been raining here where I am, California, Southern California, so. We weren't able to do much to, you know, going out, the usual activities other than, you know, go to the movies. But, so far it's not so bad, but we'll see for the Christmas holidays. We'll have at least 2 weeks off. Need to have better planning for that.
Yep. Well, and so you've got some time here. I love how you're thinking about thinking ahead and what you can do differently. That'll be really helpful. Who else wants to check in? Are you guys gonna make me call on you, April?
It's going all right. We started kind of a motivational structure with school, where if we get so much done a day after conferences, it was a good conference, but we decided that, you know, Nate is can do more than he is doing. It's okay to sit where he was, but we've actually seen some positive. He gets to watch TV if he gets so much done at school or screen time. And yesterday he came home and knew he was late on an assignment and actually wanted to do it and get it done. So that was a score.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how you set up a system and structure around it, and you're, you know, picking one thing and you're implementing it slowly. It sounds like a great strategy. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Christy, what about you? How are things going?
I think we're improving a little bit, maybe. We changed medication, or actually added a different one for mood stabilization. So he's just been on that. Thursday will be 2 weeks. So I think maybe a little progress. Mm-hmm. One thing I did last night when he was close to going in, I could see his anger rising. I just started a pillow fight with him. Just to humor. He loves pillow fighting, you know, when he's not mad. Something playful he likes to do anyway. So I just started one, and it kind of snapped him out of it. I mean, he wasn't back to normal and totally fine afterwards, but he didn't go into a rage and break anything or throw anything at me. So I felt like that was a success.
Well, I think that's a great tool, and I'm glad you shared it, because I think it'll fit in really well with the conversation we're going to have today about triggers. You did a great job noticing and knowing what triggers him, paying attention, and deflecting it using humor. Congratulations. I know that's not easy when you're watching things and waiting for them to explode.
Yeah.
Sheila, what about you? How have things been going?
I wasn't on the last call, so I'm not just kind of got swept up into life. I think things are I don't even know what to say. My son was on clonidine for several weeks, and I thought it kind of helped a little, and my husband was really, really didn't want him to take any medication, and so we kind of just have weaned off of that, and I don't notice any difference with him not being on it. So I don't know. I think we're getting better at just managing everything. So that's helpful. You know, thinking ahead to the possible problems that could arise from having all the three kids at home over break, or, you know, like, they fight over DVDs, you know, what DVD they're going to watch. And so this time I had them pick out and agree to all the DVDs that they were going to watch ahead of time. First it's this one, then this one, then this one. And everybody agreed, and it totally worked. There was not one fight, because it was all planned. So I must have maybe got the what you guys were talking about, even though I wasn't on the call. Because that was pretty organized.
Well, and it feels good when you hit a home run. It gives you the energy to do it again. So good for you.
And actually, I tried to get on. You know, it said, what's the password for getting on? Do I have my own password that I just forgot? Or is there a password
on the website?
Yeah.
We change the password periodically. It's success with a capital S, 2014. Is that right? Am I remembering the right one? Hang on. Is that right? Anybody else? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep, that's
success
correct.
With capital S, 2014, one word.
Okay. So that way I'll get on. And I still haven't I'm just telling everybody this, so I'll do it. But I have – and somebody from your office even sent me – the workbook pages.
Okay.
So I will do that today. I guess. What did everybody do? Do you just print them? And then
some people print them. I think it just depends. Some people like to write them down. They print them every week, so they can, like, when they read them, like they'll print out 1 week and they'll have it there. Some people have the whole workbook and they just keep it on their desk. Some people just do it online and then write their notes in a notebook or a piece of paper. It just depends on you and your, you know, they find a pattern that works well for your brain that helps you to kind of remember to have it. I pull mine up on the computer each week, and so I have it right there, and then I make my notes on a piece of paper on the side. It's the way I do it. Anybody else have clever ideas they want to share?
I mean, for me, I printed it all out, put it in a binder, and just write notes on it whenever we have this session. Because that's what works for me.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think I'll do that.
I print mine each week so that I remember to read it. When I print it, I read it and then have it ready in a notebook for that day.
And I can I be looking at it right now? Or can I go there right
now?
Okay.
Yeah, you can. So if you log in, go to the members login, and it's right there on that home page. You can just click it. If you go to PSS, type in a password, and then there's a link at the very top.
Okay.
I did it a little differently. I put it on my phone and my iPad because it's a PDF, so it can be opened up. So if I have a few minutes anywhere I am, I can get to it too.
Great idea. Lots of good ideas. Yay. Okay.
Thank you.
So let's take aim real quick. And our conversation today is going to be about triggers and maybe your triggers, maybe your kids' triggers. It just depends on which direction you go. So take a minute and come up with an area that you want to take aim on for our conversation today and potentially even for the next couple weeks. So once you've got an idea of where you want to take aim, we'd love to hear you share that with the group, please. And if you need help taking aim, I can help you out.
I need help, Diane.
Okay.
This is Christy. As a counselor, you know, we have worked on different tools for Caleb to have when he feels like he's getting angry. Calm down. We have bubbles he can pop and Play-Doh and books to rip and a punching bag, all different kinds of things. And he knows where they are, and he chose what room to put them in. But I cannot get him to ever go to those things when he starts feeling that way. So I guess I need to take aim maybe on how to get him to utilize them. I'm not sure how to focus that.
Well, it makes sense because you've got the tools. Do you feel like you've got the buy-in for him, Christy, or do you feel like
Maybe face value. He can verbalize it that he knows what they are, he knows where they are, but I don't know. He doesn't utilize them.
And
so
let me ask the question a different way. Do you think he sees that they're helpful?
I don't know. Probably not, or he might go to them.
Okay. So it's really about trying to find a way to get him to engage in the calming tools you have, whether it's not clear whether you would do that by getting buy-in or whether it would be about creating routine, but it sounds like you're a step ahead of that, which is, you know, trying to figure out getting curious, what's going on with him, and then trying to figure out what it would be that might help him to get attached. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Okay. Anybody else need help or want to share what they're taking aim on?
This is Sheila. I just noticed when I ask my kids to do something and they don't do it and they just totally blow me off and ignore me, I really get triggered. And that's when I start yelling. And so that would be, should I be more specific or just?
No, I think that's great. I think it's you've identified a particular behavior that triggers you, and I think it'll be helpful because it's not just about, well, I want to manage my triggers. It's really you want to manage your triggers in those moments where you feel like you're getting blown off.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Great. Well, Donna, April?
Yeah, this is Donna. I guess related to what I mentioned earlier, I think I need to set a plan with my son, who's 8 years old, about our weekends. Because to be honest, I dread the weekends because, I have to deal with him the whole day, the whole 2 days. Unlike when it's a school day, you know, he's at school most of the day, and then we have our routine, you know, planned for the afternoon through the evening. But the weekend is a little bit less structured. So that's when we often have, you know, a lot of issues and, you know, yelling included, and I like to minimize. So
I'm going to encourage you to get a little bit more specific, Donna. What is it specifically do you want to tackle creating more structure on the weekend? Do you want to tackle managing your triggering? What do you think is going on?
Um,
probably specifically what I want to tackle is at least we'll have like a checklist maybe of things that we need to take care of for the weekend. You know, that would include things, you know, his playtime. But we do need to stick with like schedule of, for example, maybe sleep. Because I tend to be very, very, I guess, a bit more lax with him during the weekends because I feel like it's been so stringent through the weekdays. But probably at least the sleep, I want to stick closer to the usual sleep time because sometimes come Monday morning and also today, my son was off yesterday as well. So he slept a little late last night. And it was a struggle to get up in the morning. So if I could maybe just continue that even through the weekends, at least going back to school would be less difficult after several days off.
Well, that makes sense. So what I'm hearing is that you want to take aim on adding some more structure and schedule to the weekend, particularly around getting sufficient sleep so that his schedule is not way off by the time it gets to the Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
April, what about you? Oh, she might have us on mute. April, do you have us on mute?
Oh, sorry. There we go. Our struggle is kind of, if something doesn't go right. Like last night we were putting up the tree, but the lights took too long and we didn't have time to get the ornaments up. And we really melted down at that point. So we're trying, I don't know what you call that trigger. The schedule didn't go according to plan, but.
It sounds like handling disappointment.
Yeah, no, that's probably an accurate description is not being able to handle disappointment. He lost a card in the arcade the other day and completely lost it. But we don't know how to help him with that. You know, that's kind of life.
Yeah, no, and that's a great segue, April, because the topic today is triggers and We all on some level have triggers, and what I know about our kids with disappointment is actually a problem of transition. So if you think about how our kids have a difficult time, like, getting off of the computer or getting ready for bed because it's a change, right? So it's like I'm going this direction and all of a sudden I have to make a change. Disappointments, handling disappointments are the same sort of thing. So your brain is going a certain direction. You expect something to happen. You're on this trajectory, and then all of a sudden, whoops, the lights took too long. We're going to, instead of getting the whole tree decorated, we're going to now decorate it tomorrow. Whoa, that's a transition. And it happened very quickly. And so it's a great example, and we'll talk about prevention of triggers in a minute. But let me kind of roll back and just talk generally about triggers. I love this topic. It's like one of my favorites. I write about it a lot. I talk about it a lot, mostly because my buttons get pushed a lot. Just me. And so I'm on page 28 of the workbook for those of you who are kind of following along. And here's the thing. This is something that happens. We're back to activating the brain. I don't know if you noticed the sub-bullet underneath session 7, but what we've done is we kind of go back through, now that we've gotten through all four of the critical response areas, we're going to go back and drill in a little bit. One of the big challenges with activating the brain is the natural brain function that happens when we get stressed out, when we get triggered, when we could call it threat mode. And so what happens is that, you know, our button gets pushed or we get upset or triggered by something. It's really biological. And, the hormones start raging. And the part of our brain that problem solves, that knows, you know, that is connected with our values and our emotions, really starts to shut down and we go into fight or flight mode. And this is true for our kids, this is true for us, but it's really a biological challenge rather than just an emotional or behavior management sort of thing. And so it's important to kind of start with that understanding is that if you've been triggered, something biologically is happening in your body that's different and you need to acknowledge that and manage to that. And so there's kind of two ways to approach button pushing or triggers. One is prevention, and then the other is management. And this might be true for you, and it might be true for your kids. So it just depends on whose buttons you're talking about and for most of us, it's sometimes it's us and sometimes it's our kids. But on the prevention side, it's about knowing and understanding what our triggers are, what our buttons are, and either preparing for them because we know they're going to happen, which is the handling the disappointment example, or it's about avoiding them if we know that it's going to be difficult. So, for example, I have a client who's got a 6-year-old and 4-year-old daughters, and one of their triggers is when they get tired after school, and so he was going to the grocery store after school with these girls, and they were constantly melting down, and it was really a difficult situation. So when he realized, oh, this is a trigger, well, maybe I need to do my grocery shopping at a different time of the day, or maybe I need to not bring the girls grocery shopping with me because I can avoid a trigger time. So the first step in prevention is really kind of understanding and knowing what triggers your kid for you. And then you can use something to deflate it. So avoidance. The other thing that I love, and I was thinking about this as you were talking about, April, about the handling disappointment, code words. I don't know if you guys have heard us talk about code words before. Can be a really great tool. And Elaine has a code word that she's always used with her kids. I can't remember. One of her kids has a really difficult time with the word no. And so they came up with a code word that means, hey, I'm going to tell you something you don't want to hear, but I have to do it anyway, so get ready. And that code word they use is bubblegum. And so whenever they say bubblegum, it means, okay, take a deep breath. You're about to be disappointed, and I'm sorry, but you need to brace yourself kind of thing. And so that's a way of knowing, of moving it forward. I think Christy gave a great example. Christy gave the example about the using humor. I mean, so if you see that your child is escalating and you know that it's a difficult situation, then maybe you can make some humor out of what you know is going to be a difficult situation. So that's kind of on the prevention side. The other side of it is the management side. And, you know, there are really, in Minimize Meltdowns, we teach about escaping the process for escaping the threat cycle. But there's really kind of 4 steps to this. The first one is understanding your triggers. And it's important. I've had clients who keep a journal of their own triggers or keep a log of their kids' triggers. I had one client who realized after keeping a journal that her daughter was melting down consistently when she was hungry or when she didn't get enough sleep the night before. And it's kind of this big aha that she went, oh, well, all I have to do is focus in on the food and the sleep, and that'll help potentially manage the meltdown. So if you can start paying attention and noticing what your child's triggers are, either the situations or the times of day or whatever it is, or same thing for yourself. I know that one of my triggers used to be going on the online system at school to look at grades, and I could just feel the hair on the back of my neck standing up because I was so afraid of what I would find. And I knew that was a trigger for myself, so I'd always make sure, should I say this on a call, I'd have a glass of wine before I looked online, or I would do it at a time of day where I had a lot of energy because I knew it was going to be stressful for me, so I tried to do it in a way that would make sense. And now I've actually deflected it, and it's my 15-year-old's job to go online himself, and then he gives me the printout and shows me what's going on rather than me having to find it myself, which helps, because I'm less stressed out by him than I am by the system itself for some reason. But so that's the first thing, is recognizing and understanding your trigger. The second step is to reclaim your brain. And so it's really important. It is a biological thing that's going on. You're either going into fight or flight, most of us. And so it's important to take a few deep breaths or take a sip of water. Water is a great brain reclaimer. Take a little time out, or give your kid a chance to time out. But it's really important before you do any problem solving or fixing any situation. And the same thing when your kid gets triggered, don't try to keep going with a problem or the situation. Get them to calm down first. Get them to reclaim their brain first. The third step is to choose a perspective. So once you've reclaimed your brain, you have access again to the problem-solving part of your brain. And it's really important to know that when you go into fight or flight, that part of the executive function that you have, it shuts down. So our ability to problem-solve or parent really effectively is definitely limited when we're in fight or flight. And the same is true for our kids, especially if our kids have ADD or if we have ADD, our executive function is already challenged. If you add stress to that, if you add a the trigger of your fight or flight, it's really very difficult to do anything other than just, you know, fight back, yell at your yell at mom, or run away, or whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's fight or flight. So once you've reclaimed your brain, you're going to choose a different perspective. So you're going to go back to problem-solving mode, and you're going to say, okay, how do I want to handle this situation? Do I want to, you know, do I want to look at this as naughty or neurological? Do I want to, you know, look at what my child needs in order to be successful? You know, what is the frame of mind? What is the perspective I want to take to move forward? So you're responding rather than reacting, and then you're going to move forward from that place. So know your triggers, reclaim your brain, choose a perspective, and move forward from that perspective. And those are the four steps to managing triggers. Okay, what comes up for everybody as I go through that topic today? Nobody gets triggered on this group, huh?
No, I mean, I guess a bunch of my triggers, but I think one thing we just don't know quite what to do is reclaiming. I mean, I know how to take a deep breath or get a glass of water, or I sometimes stomp off to my office and say, I need a timeout, which is not always the best, but we really struggle to get Nathaniel to reclaim himself at all.
Yeah. Well, and so part of that, April, is modeling and being really transparent when you're doing it, and so you're beginning to teach him. One of the tools that I've had parents use when they've got younger kids is to say, wow, things are getting a little heated here. Why don't we both take some space? You know, so it's kind of like you suddenly, it's like it's both of us are getting upset, or both of us are, you know, so everybody needs a break, so it's not just them. So you kind of, you know, more normalize it, and because it is pretty normal for people to get triggered. We all do it. It's just a matter of what it is and how frequently and how quickly we manage it. But I know, and one of the things that Christy was talking about was the fact that she has like a calming box, that she has a set of tools that that are standard go-tos. And so, you know, I got other clients. I don't know, Christy, if you put yours in a box or whether he just knows what his tools are, but, you know, just even having your child have a list in their head of, well, I can get a book, or I can grab a stuffed animal, or I can get a hug from mom, or I can, you know, take a few deep breaths, or if I've got a punching bag and they like the punching bag, you know, whatever it is that helps them to calm down, if you can share, these are the things that I do to calm myself down, and in a non-situation, you do the same thing for them. Does that resonate, April?
Yeah. I think we need to talk with him about it because I don't think it will be normal thing. So.
Yeah. Well, and the thing I would recommend is make sure you have the conversation when it's not triggered.
Yeah. What will calm you down? Well, you're yelling at me. That's not really helpful.
Anybody else? What comes up for you, or what's coming up in terms of triggers or trigger management? So Sheila, can I go back to you?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm going to ask you a different question. So you mentioned that you get triggered when you feel like your kids are blowing you off.
Yes.
So what, get curious about yourself, what is it about that really bugs you?
Oh, it just feels so disrespectful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and anybody would get angry if they felt like they were being disrespected. As parents, we've worked hard to earn respect, and we have rules and values around respect, and so it makes sense that would make you frustrated.
And it's very tiring because it's like how many times do I have to say, please get in your pajamas? You know, my mom said it to me once, and I just went and did it. So, really.
Yeah, so I'm going to take you back. So the process would be to understand your trigger, and it sounds like you do. You understand that when they blow you off and they don't listen to you, it feels like disrespect, and disrespect makes you angry and it throws you into fight or flight. So
right.
What do you typically do to reclaim your brain?
Well, sometimes I pretend like I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like whatever. You know, like in a positive way.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because you just went from, so it sounds like your natural instinct is fight, right? So you disrespect me, I'm going to get mad. And then what you said is, instead of fighting, I'm going to say whatever, which sounded a little bit like flight. Just like, I'm out of here, I'm not dealing with this.
Right.
So both of those are pretty, the word I'm going to use is catabolic, which is kind of like destructive. It's that fight or flight energy, right?
Right.
When you get upset and you want to calm yourself down, what are the things that calm you down?
Going in another room, going away, you know, like closing my door and just not, I don't know, you know, like maybe looking at something on the computer or calling somebody.
So a distraction, right? So that's a great
thing.
If you can recognize I'm upset, I'm going to distract myself so I can calm down a little bit. So I'm going to go do some Facebook is mine. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go play on Facebook for a few minutes because it'll help me calm down. You know, the deep breathing, I can't tell you, the water, it really does work chemically. So many told me once that you can't drink water and be upset at the same time. It's just biologically impossible. I don't know if that's true or not, but there's something about the cooling of the water and the brain and everything else. So I always recommend that. I have clients who walk around with water bottles all day long. But so then once you've reclaimed your brain, you choose a different perspective. And so, Sheila, if we stick with you for a second, is the one that kind of comes up for me is, what's a realistic expectation around your child and the pajamas?
Well, I guess, you know, the effective thing to do is to take one of them by the hand and go with them to their room and stand there while they and say, you know, it's time to get in your pajamas. I mean, that's what works, not just saying, go do it, because they're just not going to. So it's like a surefire way to just not work and get the whole ball rolling into a negative, ineffective mode.
Right. And so it's not so much that, you know, it would be great if they could do it on their own, but it's not that they're bad kids. They just have a really difficult time settling down enough to get their pajamas on. And so knowing that and taking action, whether it's kind of, you know, making light of it or separating them and taking them one at a time or doing something to kind of deflect the situation, you're choosing a different perspective, which is, I'm not going to stand here and expect that they'll do it. Somebody said yesterday, we were talking about Einstein and the fact that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. So,
right.
Like, if we the 17th time we say go get your pajamas on and they don't do it and we're surprised. So, the new perspective is my kids need more hand holding in the process of getting their pajamas on. Sometimes it's just getting our kids' attention. So it's just kind of like making sure that they have eye contact before we give them an instruction, or making sure that they're not so revved up that they're the part of their brain that tells them what they're supposed to do is turned on, you know, that sort of thing. So you choose a new perspective, and then if you knew that your child is, you know, needs help in getting their pajamas on, your action becomes, I'm going to take one of them by the hand and I'm moving to the bedroom and we're going to get our pajamas on. Does that make sense in terms of how you go through that four-step process, Sheila?
Yes. Thank you.
What other questions do folks have? Or
I was just going to say we had real troubles with toothbrushing, and one of the therapists said, hand it to them, you know, because Nate's very visual. And if he might forget, but, you know, 30 seconds later, he'll see the toothbrush in his hand. So if it's a bad night and I need to get him to do something, sometimes I will walk, you know, I have two other kids, so I might not be able to stand there and dress him or put his pajamas on. So sometimes I will hand things to him and that, oh, she really wants me to put my pajamas on right now. I can walk away once I hand it to him, but the visual helps.
That's a great suggestion, April. Thanks. So what else around triggers for folks?
Elaine, I just have a question on the other, that, you know, you mentioned earlier about if it requires having to guide the child towards, you know, putting on the pajama, then, you know, we go about that route. Sometimes I do that with my son, but my concern is him continuously being dependent on me, having to guide him or having to, you know, just for him to keep doing it. You know, one other example is the putting on the uniform when he goes to school. You know, sometimes he would wake up on time, but then, you know, he would get stalled at getting dressed. So I would have to help him put on, like, his shirt, and then he'll get started. But if I don't do that at times, then he'd just be stalled there until I, you know, snap my fingers and start talking to him in a raised voice. I guess my concern is how do we kind of keep them guided but then allow them to be independent or encourage them to be independent, because I guess ADHD kids, it's really hard.
And that's a fair question. I think that the thing, you know, is when we talk about scaffolding in younger kids, I mean, my recommendation is that, you know, if they're having a hard time doing it, assume they're having a hard time doing it. And figure out what they need in terms of support. And then continue to try to take the scaffolding down. You know, so it's kind of like if it's I'm helping you to get dressed, and then, you know, maybe the first step is to, you know, to be more transparent. And you're going to say, okay, I'm going to stand here. Let's, you know, well, I'll do your pants and you do your shirt. Or I'm making this up as I go, but it's kind of like you're working with them as well as doing for them. And so then you're setting the stage for, okay, you know, you're doing it with assistance for a while, and then it's like, hey, what do you think if next week we try it so that you put your shirt on by yourself, but I'll stand here and watch you just in case you need some help. So you're setting them up for gradually becoming more and more independent, but it's the same thing when they're younger. I mean, the reality is that our kids at 8 here developmentally are more like, you know, 4 or 3, or, you know, depending on the situation and the executive function challenges. But, you know, for the most part, I mean, I can tell you, and all the parents I work with, if their kids are having a hard time doing something, they're really having a hard time and they do need some help of some sort. And you're not going to do it forever. I mean, I don't put my 15-year-old's shirt on anymore. Sometimes I do. If he's having a hard time getting out of bed, I'd be like, here's your shirt. Let's put it on. Let's go. You know, so it's, but they do eventually become more independent, and you want them to be. So I can only imagine that you're going to set yourself both up for success around that, Donna.
Okay.
How does that feel?
That's reassuring.
Yeah? But I'm hearing some hesitation in your voice still.
Oh, no, it's just that, well, I guess I'm hoping for a perfect world where I don't have to do that, but I guess it's part of, you know, our responsibility as parents or ADHD kids.
Well, and it's hard.
But, I mean, it doesn't happen all the time. It's just that on days that I wish he would be more proactive are usually the days when he's needing a lot of guidance. But we have some smooth days, but
Well, and it was interesting. I don't remember if it was on this call or the call at noon, but somebody was saying when I get triggered, my kid is more likely to get triggered. And so I'm wondering what it is about those days when you want him to be independent that it makes it difficult for him to be independent. Are you differently attentive? I know for me, if I'm having a bad day, I'm not as consistent. And so I don't, you know, even if we've got a structure set up where I'm supposed to do something at a certain time to help them, if I'm off balance or tired or whatever else, I don't do my part in the process. And so it makes it more difficult for them to do their part. And I don't know if that resonates with you in this situation, but.
There are really just some days where it seems so easy for him and some days that are just really not easy for him. So I don't quite see a pattern, although it's very predictable when, you know, he didn't have sufficient sleep the night before, that I basically have to tickle him to wake up. Then that is sort of very telling that, okay, this is one of those days where I would really have to guide him getting ready for school. You know, he's getting his shirt on. But yeah, we do have some days where it's been like almost a miracle, and I you know, we joke around it. Okay, Isaac, my son, can you pinch me, because it feels like I'm in a dream. Because, you know, he would say, "Hey, mom, I'm ready," without me having to tell him a single thing, and he just gets ready on his own. There are days like that, but you know, there are also days where it's the opposite.
Well, and I think the one thing that's funny, because I heard it at Chad again when we were in Chicago a couple weeks ago, is that the challenges of ADHD are situational. And I just keep repeating that to myself, because it's not always going to be that they, you know, sometimes they can do it and sometimes they can't do it. And it's normal that it's inconsistent. And that helps me to remember that sometimes it's going to work and sometimes it's not. And you just kind of got to roll with it sometimes.
Mm.
All right, who else? Christy, I'm curious about going back to the buy-in and the calming tools. What kind of were you thinking about as I was talking through the steps of the process?
I don't know, really. I mean, I will definitely say, I mean, this is my second time through this, so the Parent Success Program. So, like, last year at this time with these triggers, I mean, I can look back and see how much progress we have made. So that's encouraging, mostly in myself. We talked about, you know, the moms being triggered. And so I, now, a year later, and I've been working on it for a year, rarely, if ever, yell at Caleb. Whereas used to, that would have been norm, because I would be so frustrated I would be triggered easily. So then he's triggered. So that's kind of my aha today.
I was going to say, can I congratulate you for that? Because that's huge.
Yes.
You've done a lot of work over the last year and a half, Christy, and I think it's hard to manage. Managing your own triggers is sometimes the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm like so blown away, if I may interrupt. That's just like a dream that I would have, to not yell, to not be triggered myself. So what did you do? What was your
This program.
Really?
I really did this program. Yeah, I mean, I did it all year last year, and I was consistent. I only missed one call because I was out of the country. So I really worked on it, and I haven't finished, so I kind of fell on this part, but I did the Minimize Meltdowns program, but I haven't finished that. I'm only about halfway through. But just the consistency every week, trying to focus on it and being aware,
mm-hmm.
is really what's helped. I mean, and I'm by no means imperfect, but I've made a lot of gains, and I feel like Caleb is better because I'm managing my own triggers better.
Well, what can
Christy,
you just share?
Like, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, can I make an observation, Christy? Because I think that what I would observe is that when you realize that stopping yourself from getting triggered is what was going to help you to parent more effectively, that it made it easier to take to make that the work to do. Does that make sense?
Say that again.
That when you realize that that not getting triggered, not yelling anymore, was like the first thing that you needed to really tackle. Not the first thing, but the thing that you really needed to tackle. And that once you could do that, that everything else would be able to be easier. You know, it's kind of almost like you prioritized the staying calm part.
Definitely. And I don't know if it was on the forum or where someone last year talked about the orange rhino.
Yeah.
Has anybody heard of that? So, I mean, I don't do the program, but I've just read her blog off and on, and so that's been really helpful because that whole that whole thing is about not yelling at your kids.
Sheila, I would recommend that too. I don't know if she's doing the program right now, but it's orangerhino.com, I think. Hang on a second.
And she's got a Facebook page. You can follow her on Facebook. But that was helpful to get tips. And yeah. She has funny things, too. She incorporates humor to try to give you other alternatives when you want to yell, go scream in the toilet or something. I mean, just silly things to help that trigger. Or
and
even to help your response to trigger. It's called the Orange Rhino.
Okay, just Google that. And
Yeah
she'll come
up.
She has a new book out. And...
Okay, great. Congratulations.
That was a good
result. That's just fantastic.
Well, that's with the journey, right? Because I still struggle. I mean, he still has huge emotional outbreaks. I mean, I have 8 holes in the wall right now. He shattered my TV about a month ago. So we're still on a journey, but my responses are definitely different.
That's
also helped my daughter.
I was trying to think, Christy, if we try to apply what you learned to your son, and we were talking earlier on about how important it is to get his buy-in to this and to how help him see how the calming tools might help him.
Yeah, sorry, I got way off track.
No. Something just kind of flashed for me in that, and there's something about that catabolic energy that if you're really having an intense emotion. And I don't know, Sheila, if you feel this way, but like sometimes if you're like really intensely anxious or intensely afraid or intensely overwhelmed, yelling really helps. And because it releases enough of the energy so you can go, oh, wait, I can reclaim my brain. I'm not completely out of control. And so I'm wondering whether it's the reason that he's having a difficult time connecting to the calming tools is that he's so intensely upset that it's kind of like, you know, is there a step before that, which is, you know, is there one kind of burst of energy thing that he could do that would get him enough back into his brain to then go, okay, yeah, I need to calm down. And I don't know if that resonates at all, but that's kind of what popped into my head.
That does, because, I mean, literally that's why we have the holes in his wall, because he'll go kick the wall, I mean, so hard that his foot goes through the wall. And then
Do you have a punching bag?
I do. Yes, he does. We got him one last year.
And is that
it's not hanging, but because he takes it outside, he takes it in his room. It's more like a big football tackling dummy, I guess. It's not a heavyweight bag. He can carry it, pull it.
It just feels like maybe what he really needs is something that will literally take some energy away. You know, something really intense, like a punching bag or yelling or. Like screaming in the toilet.
I'm willing to talk to him about the yelling because the punching bag hasn't really done the trick. He hasn't helped. And we have a trampoline. You can go out and jump or do flips or whatever.
Well, and I think that that's the thing. A trampoline is not fast enough. So it's like you need something immediate where it's just kind of like.
Yes.
I just, you know, like you all, you know, it's like everybody yells for 30, you know, for 3 seconds. And then, you know, it's kind of like you'd almost rather deal with the yelling than. The kicking the wall.
Then hurt. Yeah, because he's destructive to property, and then he's also, you know, he's thrown things at me that could be very painful if he had better aim.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So let's do our wrap-up here. Back in the workbook, we're on page 29, and our 4 questions here. So what did I focus on? What did I pay most attention to during the conversation? And then what's my clarity? What's my takeaway? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success with this action? Take a minute, make some notes for yourself, and would love to hear from a few of you what your takeaways were and what you're going to do about it. Donna, you feel like going first?
Sure. So I guess the ability to manage triggers is one thing that I'm not very good at, although I'm aware of what triggers my son, you know, if he has some behavior issues or if he's starting to have a meltdown, I'm well aware of what those would be. But I guess it's more on my part where I don't always handle it very well or in a consistent way. I guess I really just need to be more aware. And I also like the idea of one thing, I believe it was you or another person mentioned it about the calming box. You know, have like multiple ideas of what could be used also for me and for my son both. You know, to, I guess, get some more ideas on how to, you know, if the meltdown has already occurred, what are the ideas, or, you know, maybe create like a literal box to have some, you know, items that they can, both of us can utilize to better manage ourselves. Yeah, I also like the idea of a punching bag. Literally, I was looking for deals over the Thanksgiving sale to get a punching bag for the house. You know, so maybe look into that.
Okay.
I mean, my son, thankfully, has not had any of, you know, like physical stuff that he's done around the house. But I'm getting worried because as he gets older, he seems to be, you know, like getting angrier. But so far, he hasn't damage anything around the house yet, maybe because I am so strong that I can control him. But, you know, of course, as he gets older, that could change.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because one of the things that I did pretty early on with my kids that I think made a huge difference is I normalized getting angry. And I said, you know, it's normal that we're going to get angry. It's normal that you're going to get triggered. It happens to everybody. What's important is that you recognize when it's starting to happen, and you manage it in a way that's healthy. And so, you know, there's healthy ways to be angry and there's unhealthy ways to be angry. And I think that once my kids realized that it was okay to be angry and that I wasn't trying to stop them from being angry, it was just trying to help them to find a way to be angry in a different way, they got it. And it may be that my kids were older. I'm trying to remember what age they were, but, it definitely was older than 8, but it's still that same sort of, you know, go crazy. When you get angry, let them know. You know, don't hide it. And let them see what you do and let them see how you manage it. And if you screw up and you yell when you don't want to, tell them, you know, wow, I really lost it. And I'm sorry I lost it. And here's what happened. And it was like somebody took over my brain and I didn't know what to do. And I just yelled and I didn't want to do it or whatever it is, that sort of stuff. So thanks, Donna. Who else wants to talk about their aha from the call today?
It's always reassuring to hear about the success of others and remind myself of the process. And I'm going to look up the orange rhino, and I'm going to be honest about when I ask, really, you know, not do the, you know, I call it like pretend asking, sort of, where I already know that they're not going to do it, but I just it's sort of like, oh, it's time to go to bed, so now, you know, I'm supposed to say, put on your pajamas. And I'm not really being honest with myself. And so, you know, I want to...
if it's going to sound brutally honest, Sheila, is that okay?
Yeah.
You sound kind of like a victim in this situation where it's like, okay, here we go again. I'm going to try to get them to go to bed, and they aren't going to go to bed.
Right.
For me, blah, blah, blah. Well, and so here's the thing. It's like when you're in that place, it's perfectly normal because you feel disrespected to go into that victim place, and you know you're not taking positive action when you're in that place. Yes?
Yes.
The level above, so there's flight is the lowest level of energy. Fight is the next lowest level of energy. The next lowest level of energy is forgiveness and reconciliation. So it's saying, you know what, this totally stinks, but I'm going to do what I can. It totally stinks that my kids will not go to bed on their own, but I want to get them to bed, so I'm going to do what I have to do, which is more productive than, okay, whatever. You're never going to get your pajamas on. You're going to be 40 years old and you're not going to wear pajamas. Might not be a too bad thing, but anyway. Does that make sense, Sheila?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know when I'm doing it that it's like bogus. And it's just, but I still, you know, it's ridiculous. So I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to be effective in my requesting.
And so the question I always have my clients ask is, like, what can I do? Okay, you know, what's here for me to act? What can I act on? You know, what is the one thing that I could do that would change this situation? You know, crack a joke, jump up and down, you know, whatever it is. But get to action, because that'll help get you unstuck.
Can I share something we did last year with that?
Sure, absolutely.
Just with Caleb, like giving him a choice. So if I don't say, okay, go get your pajamas on, I just say, okay, do you want to brush your teeth first or do you want to put your pajamas on? It's your choice. So if they have a choice maybe in the routine or whatever they do first, it might help spur them to action.
Okay, that's good.
That helped with Caleb anyway. Not always helped, but sometimes it helps.
All right. Anybody else? We're kind of at time here, but last call if somebody wants to do a quick checkout and let us know what they're going to focus in on for the next couple weeks.
Well, it really resonated that disappointment is a transition. We're so careful in our home with time transitions, and I guess we haven't focused any energies on emotional transitions. So that's kind of, you know, ring a bell with me. And we have a family night on Mondays. And I'm going to try to do something, talk about code words or possibly triggers. We don't quite have my thoughts all together on that, but kind of have a discussion out of the context there.
Any other thoughts? All right, guys, thanks for a great call. We've got one more call before the end of the year. We're going to be on in 2 weeks on the 16th. Look forward to talking to you all then.
Thank you.
Oh, Christy,
thank you.
Can you stay on for just 1 second?
Who?
Christy.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Let me turn off the recording.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Hang on 1 second, Christy, for some reason it's not.